Hi, welcome to an EOGN podcast. My name is Dick Eastman, and I have one of the great strengths and pleasures I have in what I do with the newsletter is I get to go to a lot of genealogy conferences. I meet a lot of people who are movers and shakers in the genealogy world, and I've managed to corner one of these movers and shakers today, and I'm a little bit in awe of what this man accomplishes. I'm having a conversation today with Blaine Bettinger, whom I know as a DNA expert. Publishes a blog, he does a lot of speaking at conferences, and has probably taught me two-thirds of what I know about DNA, in the world of genealogy anyway. I've also learned in the last few minutes that Blaine has a lot of other background that I wasn't aware of. Blaine, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Dick.
And rather than me trying to introduce you and probably messing the whole thing up, I'm going to ask you what brought you to where you are today.
Well, yes, I have been interested in genealogy for about 20, 25 years, and I was in...
You must have started at the age of 15, right?
I think, even a little younger than that.
Wow,
yes,
okay.
Yeah. And I was in grad school, about 2003, and I was studying biochemistry, molecular biology, and so DNA testing for genealogy blended the two things I love most in the world, genealogy and science. And so I took my first DNA test and was hooked ever since. After grad school, I actually then went to law school, and I am now an intellectual property attorney. So that's what I do by day. By night, I'm a genetic genealogist. I have a blog at thegeneticgenealogist.com. Mm-hmm. And I write about the intersection of genealogy and DNA, both personal genomics, medical testing, all sorts of different aspects of DNA testing.
Well, great. I'm glad you said that. I could never have repeated that. But you've obviously got a great research capabilities, both from your own genealogy experience, plus I know attorneys are pretty competent at that sort of stuff.
Yes, that's right.
And the background in molecular biology, correct?
Correct.
I'm more impressed now than I was 2 minutes ago.
Okay.
But let me start off as a newcomer, which I am pretty much. I'm not a DNA expert, and I'll be the first to tell that. I think you already know that. What I find is anybody that's new to DNA and its uses, particularly in genealogy, they get very confused by all the new buzzwords, the terminology. I mean, you read things about Y chromosomes and mitochondrial and autosomal, and I can't even think of the other buzzwords right now, but you know this, there's dozens of them. How does somebody who's just entering into this endeavor decode that and figure out just what is what?
Right. I think you probably have the same experience as so many other people. You get these results back. You're all excited to take the DNA test. You get the results back. You log in, and you have no idea what to do next. There's a list of names. There's some really nice pie charts about ethnicity. But how do you all put that into practice? How do you actually apply that to your genealogical research? And to do that, it requires a lot of hands-on activity. It's unfortunately, we're not at the stage, and who knows if we'll ever be at the stage, where you suddenly log into your account and everything you want to know about your genealogy is revealed thanks to one DNA test.
Not this year.
Not this year. Okay. No. Keep your eyes out for 2016, maybe, but definitely not this year. So it requires a lot of knowledge and hands-on work. And that's the unfortunate part, because people either they don't have that knowledge or they don't have the time to put into doing that. So what I try to do is I try to help people with the knowledge aspect. I can't give them more time, but I can teach them how to go about it when they do have the time. So that's why I started the blog, thegeneticgenealogist.com, in 2007, was to help people understand all the different aspects of DNA testing, how to apply it, how to understand the results they were getting. At that time, I was only writing about Y-DNA and mitochondrial DNA, the male line and the female line. And that's because autosomal DNA wasn't even on the scene yet. So once autosomal DNA was being offered by companies like Family Tree DNA, Ancestry DNA, 23andMe, then we have this explosion of people who are taking these types of tests. So for example, Ancestry DNA and 23andMe both announced this year that they had tested their 1 millionth customer. So we have coming up now close to 3 million people or more that have tested their DNA. And so there's an enormous demand for education to understand, when I log in, how do I use those results? And there are a couple of options. There are some great blogs that teach people how to use their results, or especially are very good about all the new developments. When there's a new tool that's being launched by one of the companies, these blogs are a great way to get that type of information. There are a couple of week-long institutes, like at GRIP, the Genealogical Research Institute of Pittsburgh, at SLIG. There's going to be a DNA course at IGHR this year.
Okay, let me interrupt. SLIG, IGHR, what do those stand for?
Okay, so those are all the week-long institutes. These are all in-person week-long institutes where people sit in the chair. So we talked about GRIP. SLIG is the Salt Lake Institute of Genealogy, and that's in, not surprisingly, Salt Lake City.
Right.
That's in January. And so there, we have all these week-long institutes that are really great because that hands-on aspect is really nice. Sometimes reading things in a blog, you can kind of read it, but you're not getting that hands-on experience. Mm. And so one other thing I'm working on is I'm developing an online course with Excelsior College. And
Excelsior.
That's right. Based in Albany.
Right, but to take it, you don't have to go to Albany. You're doing it online.
That's correct. It's an online course, a 16-week online course. So people don't always have the opportunity to travel to an institute, take a week off from work, and sit in the class. And unfortunately, but it's just the reality of it. So the next best thing is to take an online course or some other course that allows them to still get that type of knowledge and some of that interaction with classmates and a teacher to learn some of these topics. So there's going to be in 2016 a new genetic genealogy course that offered through Excelsior College. They have a website at genealogy.excelsior.edu that people can learn more about that as well. So there are a lot of opportunities for people that want to learn more about how to use these strange results that they're finding, how to make these connections with people that seem to have no link to them in their family trees. They're there. We just have to really work hard to find them.
Right. So, the online course, reading the blogs, maybe there's a book or two out there that works to help explain some of this, I'm guessing.
There are a couple of good books. There's an older book by Ann Turner, mm-hmm, and Megan Smolniak, Trace Your Roots with DNA. It's an excellent book. It doesn't talk about autosomal DNA, unfortunately, because there was no autosomal DNA testing when they wrote that book, but it is an excellent book for the fundamentals of Y-DNA and mitochondrial DNA.
Super.
Dave Dowell just published a book, Next Gen Genealogy, that is about genetic genealogy, and it incorporates an autosomal DNA chapter as well. So there are some books out there for people to read as well.
Excellent. Very good. And as a result, what would be the intermediate step after a person gets halfway through all of this? Where would they go after that? More education, I assume.
Right. So actually, at much of these institutes, they have a beginner course and an advanced course, which, mm-hmm, is nice. So that people, I would recommend that people start off, it depends on really their comfort level. You might want to start off reading it in a book to see where you think your comfort level is, how much of that knowledge you have. But a lot of times what happens, in my experience, is people will read the book, but applying it to the facts of their own research can be really, really difficult. They'll say, well, I understand how DNA, why DNA works, or I understand how autosomal DNA works, but I have this really specific question about my great-grandmother Jane. How do I apply that autosomal DNA to find her mysterious parents? I think she was adopted, or something along those lines. And so anytime you can get that one-on-one personal interaction, that's why I almost every lecture I give, I'll get questions at the end where it's their fact-specific questions. I understand how Y-DNA works, but how do I use it for Uncle Fred? How do I figure out whether he's really Uncle Fred or not? So I think that's the, get the fundamental knowledge and then try to find that next step, that intermediate step of interacting with somebody, to even if it's in a society. Lots of societies now have DNA interest groups or, mm-hmm, or digs, they call them. They have all kinds of fancy names for these, but these are great ways to bounce ideas off each other and work to try to find these fact-specific answers.
Okay. Let me bring up a big scare word that I encounter all the time. People are really worried, particularly for many reasons, but particularly in DNA, is this thing called privacy. Somebody gonna, if I take a test and start doing things online, somebody gonna steal my DNA information?
Well, the way I usually describe it is that your DNA really isn't that interesting. It's interesting to us,
right?
But it really isn't that interesting to anyone else. So there is some correlation between health and your DNA, for example. None of the companies are really doing health testing at the current time. 23andMe did in the past. They've currently are stopping that while they're working with the FDA to get approved for that. So if you're very worried about privacy, probably DNA testing isn't for you. Just because you're always going to be a little bit uncomfortable with it. If you're on the fence about it, I would say to you, again, your DNA just isn't that interesting. Nobody's going to come looking for it because it just isn't that, no one cares that enough about it. The only time DNA really becomes valuable is if you take a whole bunch of it and gather it together. So that's why, for example, 23andMe recently had some deals where they're gathering everyone's DNA, they're de-identifying it, and they will provide that information to researchers who are trying to find connections between disease and health, between DNA and health. So you have to keep that in mind. You have to realize that when you're sending away your DNA sample, you are losing some control over it. I don't think there's anything nefarious going on at all, because again, nobody really cares that much about your DNA. But you have to keep that in mind. If you have privacy concerns, that's definitely something to consider before you send away your DNA sample. You don't want to be worried about privacy after you Right. send away your DNA sample. That's not the right time to do that.
Right, okay. Well, that's reassuring to hear. What do you think, if you and I come back, say, 5 years from now and have a similar conversation, what will we be talking about in the world of DNA?
I think we would have almost exactly the same conversation. Although there are going to be great tools that help people do a lot of this, that automate a lot of the steps that are currently there, so much of DNA will always be hands-on. Because just as with regular genealogy, documentary genealogy, it's about putting the time in. You have to, all the records are being made available. Mm-hmm. Just like all of our DNA matches are being made available. But we have to do the work to put the 1850 census and the 1860 census together and come up with a hypothesis. So we're going to have to do the same thing with DNA. Although there's some great tools in the regular genealogy world, in the genetic genealogy world, we're still going to be doing all of that work, to put it together.
A similar question. What's in the future for Blaine Bettinger? I see you at these conferences, and I hear you talking about DNA, but you're going to continue as is, or are you going to expand and do some new feature here and expand your expertise in it?
Well, I'm doing what I love. I love going to conferences. I love meeting people. I love talking to people. I love giving presentations. So I'm just happy doing what I'm doing. And in the meantime, I'm trying to do as much of my own genealogy research as I can. I have an adopted great-grandmother, for example, that I'm working very aggressively on. I think I just made a breakthrough with DNA. So if nothing else, I'm going to keep working on my own DNA to gain that additional expertise about how to break through some of these brick walls. And I'm loving what I'm doing right
now. Super. Well, that's perhaps the best recommendation for any of us could aspire to.
Absolutely.
Blaine, I appreciate you taking the time out of your, what I know is a busy schedule.
Well, thank you.
With today. I love what you're doing, and I'm going to be reading your blog. Well, I already am reading your blog, but I'm going to be paying even closer attention to it. And I look forward to anything else you're doing here in the future. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, Dick.
Okay. I've been speaking with Blaine Bettinger, who, as we said at the beginning, got a great background in this, obviously a DNA expert, and he mentioned a whole bunch of other areas. I can see why he is able to speak with this authority. You've been listening to a podcast from EOGN. My name is Dick Eastman. We're going to have a few more of these. We invite you to come back again and see some of the other interesting people I have a chance to talk to. Thank you.